Hi, this is Jean Bruce Scott.
And Randy Reinholz.
And when we're not busily producing some of the most outstanding Native American theater in Los Angeles,
we always like to check out the best of British audio adventures with Alex Lefchuk and his team of the Midweek Drive.
And Midweek Drive morning editions on Siren FM.
And southsidebroadcasting.podbean.com.
Well, it's here. Perhaps we were thinking it would be here, but it has actually arrived. Now, I'm not talking about Finding Freedom, the latest book in the Royal Saga. That's for another time and another scenario, etc. No, the most important thing is the annual results day, of course, that's happening for A-level results, but probably the most unusual A-level results day ever. We've already heard from our Scottish correspondents in terms of what's been happening there. We now hear about triple locks in terms of people don't need to worry. And I think at the heart of this, it's probably ensuring that students' well-being is very much maintained and that actually people do not need to worry unnecessarily, despite all the media flux that's actually there. Now, to cut through that media flux and to actually ensure that we can also celebrate the wonderfulness that the University of Lincoln actually produces from that point of view, not just one, but two fabulous individuals from the events and marketing team and public relations and communications. First of all, Director of Communications, the awesome Ellie Sample. How are you, Ellie?
I'm super, Alex, and it's brilliant to be here. How are you?
Very good. So it's almost as though this is the new have a morning coffee, isn't it? The sort of over Zoom thing, getting ourselves coordinated. That's brilliant. And also from the University of Lincoln in terms of marketing, your deputy, vice president, running mate. There are so many sort of lines we can actually refer
running
to.
Running mate, that's where
exactly.
We are.
Exactly. Yeah. Ian Richards, how are you, Ian?
I'm not too bad, thanks, Alex. How are you?
Very good. Who would have thought, Ian, when you made your debut on Siren in the studios back in the day, that we'd end up like some sort of crazed science fiction scenario communicating over the video phone, basically. Amazing.
We'll call it progress, I suppose.
Yeah, progress, I suppose. And I suppose that's what Vladimir Putin is saying when he's now found the cure for and the whole vaccine. But let's not go there, because that's another line entirely. And as far as I'm aware, Vladimir Putin, Ellie, is not on one of the list of guest speakers for the University of Lincoln at the moment.
No, not at the moment, but he would be an interesting one. You know, our Great Life series would greatly benefit from the kind of insight into fake news, am I allowed to say that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're putting it out there. You know, this podcast is going out through the world. I'm sure they'll be listening. We know the CIA listens, so obviously if
everyone,
if
who wouldn't listen?
Exactly.
Alex, you're amazing. You're amazing. But I do have to mention, we do have an amazing guest speaker today for anyone who's got time. Wes Nelson at 2 o'clock, the Love Islander. So, and the reason we've got him on today, Alex, is because obviously anyone who's thinking about going to university this autumn, leaving home for the first time, living with a load of people they don't know, just like going on to Love Island. So we thought, who better to talk about that than Love Islander Wes Nelson?
Precisely. And I'll just sort of qualify that, Ellie, slightly by saying, just like going on to a wonderful version of Love Island without any of the suicidal tendencies that have accompanied the series as well. So let's just focus on that, you know?
Very positive. It's
yeah,
a really
exactly.
Good
yes. I would like
lots
to say more
support.
Yeah, more fantasy island, as in the sort of the old, which I suspect you're too young to remember.
I remember fantasy island.
Exactly. You know, with Ricardo Montalban and indeed Hervé Villechaize, who would open up every episode by saying, "It's the plane, boss. It's the plane. The plane." Ian probably wonders what we're actually talking about at this particular stage. I just have one thing to say, Ian, YouTube, okay? That's the key thing for that. Fantasy Island.
He's too young. He's too young.
Everyone out of things to watch on Netflix, that's where I'll go next.
All right, well, yeah, I'm not sure what it actually is on that streaming service, but it will certainly open up that whole thing. Ian, Wes Nelson, obviously a great coup from that point of view. How can people, I mean, is this going to be an online delivery? How is it going to be accessed today?
Yeah, it's online. It's really, Wes has done these for us before. He's really fabulous. So it's live from our website. So with everything that's happened in the world, me and Ian have to get really, really good at technology. So we can now broadcast live TV from our website. And Wes will be live. You can ask him questions live. He'll be being interviewed by one of our alumnus, who I think you know, Alex, the really wonderful Marvin, and he'll be asking lots of challenging questions, like, top tips for 18-year-olds. How come you're so likeable, Wes? And what were your best bits of Love Island?
Wow. I mean, that's just like the teaser bits, only just at the start of the whole thing, which is fantastic. Ian, can you cast your mind back, hopefully in the not too distant past, to A-level results day and what sort of anticipation you were feeling on the eve of the A-level results? Because, I mean, I get the feeling almost every year it becomes almost more media hyped, and this year perhaps more than ever because of the pandemic, because of all the issues that we've actually seen with the whole thing. What were your own experiences before you received? I mean, I'm one of those people who actually, I'll admit it, I receive my A-level results in an envelope, okay? I go to the school and actually sort of, you know, access the things from there. None of this, oh, you know, and indeed, there were very, I don't think there's any press around to actually photograph whoops of joy or despair when we actually
it
sort of opened up the envelope.
It won't be too long before people like Ian are saying, what's an envelope, Alex? Sorry, Ian.
No, I was thinking actually this morning. I think this is my I think this is my 11th or 12th A-level results day working in higher education, and I remembered my first one and just thinking, wow, this is really sort of an exciting, really exhilarating day. I said yesterday, kind of fairly flippantly, it feels when you work in a university marketing communications team, it's almost like the entire year kind of distilled into one day, because so much happens and there's so much sort of joy and excitement, and you genuinely are sort of changing people's lives, where people, you really sort of sense that from the staff who are on the phones making those offers. And you get every high and low of sort of human emotion on those phone calls, from kind of sort of despair to real excitement. And I think that's one of the sort of the beautiful things about working in higher education, is you realise you are making a difference to people's lives and creating all these amazing opportunities for young people. And clearing adjustment is a really big part of that. And what's really nice as well is we hear stories from our alumni sort of 3-4 years after they've gone through that process, where they say, wow, that was the most important phone call I've ever made, and it set them on this sort of amazing trajectory to do great things. So personally, I really enjoy it still. There's lots of nervousness and, as you say, anticipation, and but it's one of those days where by sort of 4 or 5 o'clock you'll be really tired, but it's sort of you kind of have a bit of a sort of buzz.
Ian, I don't know how to tell you, we're working till 7 tomorrow. If you're tired at 4 o'clock, we're going to be in real trouble. And the thing that makes me sad this year, Ian, you sum it up so well, but the thing that makes me really sad is we normally do clearing open house. So all those people we speak to on the phone then drop in and see us over the weekend and meet us and get to find out what they've let themselves in for at that point, and see, well, the amazing facilities, top 20 university, TEF Gold. They find out why Lincoln has all these accolades. But it's really sad we can't do that this year. So what we're doing, Alex, is we're doing a live lounge. So again,
with Trevor Nelson. Oh no, perhaps not.
no, not with Trevor, but yeah,
lots of soul music in the background, Ellie, perhaps, you know, and kind exactly. Of, you know, upbeat rhythm and blues.
Well, we'll be interviewing our accommodation manager, so we'll get him to do a little shuffle. He'll be showing off his accommodation live online, and we'll be interviewing the students. Our wonderful student leaders are coming on and talking about all the amazing things that are going to be going on this autumn, because I know people are really worried about what university will be like in the autumn, and, you know, with COVID-19, and what does that mean? But Ian, I'm going to let you talk about the TPs and say exactly how fantastic it's going to be this autumn.
I've raised this issue before, Ian, and spoken to a couple of people, in fact, a couple of returning students who I was having a Zoom call with a few days ago, and I said, it's okay that we'll have socially distanced TPs there. And it's fair to say I got quizzical looks from them, basically. So talk to us about the TP experience.
My understanding is that these TPs, that they are enormous. They're kind of the TPs that we use up at graduation. So to just get a sort of sense of the scale, and yeah, we're looking to have one on either side of campus to give us some more social space. That's obviously kind of resilient to the weather as we get into November, December, but where Students can use that space to socially and safely. I think that's the key thing as well. So obviously there will be adequate social distancing provisions in place. Because really one of the kind of big exercise, important exercises the university is going through now is we're quite blessed really at Lincoln in that we have a campus university and we've got lots of great indoor and outdoor spaces. So we're looking at how can we maximise that as a kind of asset to make sure that we that students have all those opportunities to socialise and get involved in clubs and societies and find new hobbies in those sort of weeks and months that might be affected by the social distancing restrictions. So kind of clever use of space is a big part of the planning that is going on right now. And obviously...
Oh, Ian's frozen on that whole situation for some bizarre reason. Oh, you're back with us, Ian. For a moment, I thought you'd frozen in TP land. It's okay.
You've got to be in a better place, though, could you? TP land must be fabulous. I actually wish I was going to be an undergraduate this year because...
And Ellie seems to have frozen on us now, etc. Oh, that's okay. just when we actually sort of got a line, we get a line saying our internet connection is unstable. Don't worry, we're okay. It's fine. It's all good.
I feel a little unstable now, Alex.
We're talking about TPs, giant TPs, and the wonders of these social environments, which presumably, even when the weather does become a bit inclement, you might well have those little portable heaters as well, so people can have the outdoor experience indoors, shall we say.
We're hoping for fire pits, to be honest. So I think it'll be a really, really amazing experience where a nice cup of hot chocolate, a fire pit, and a big rug round your shoulders. It will be a fantastic night out.
And I would point out on behalf of any academic staff who might be concerned, the fire pits are not there to sacrifice academics. It's just it's a line there. I know we've talked at length about ways in which we can kind of enhance the sort of the historical elements, but I don't think that's the intention at this stage. Anyway, it's all sounding fantastic.
There will be appropriate health and safety adhered to, Alex.
that's just the start of the whole thing. Clearly, technology is very much a part of the whole experience these days. And Ian, we've talked about how these things have actually changed, and Ellie's mentioned about how the things have gone online, etc. In many ways, we could look to this as being, I suppose, indicative of a kind of a future, and something which actually there are good bits that will come out of this dreadful pandemic, which has been having all sorts of things there. Ellie, quick hello to your canine friend as well. He's just popped into the room. Yay.
Sorry, that's Benson. He really wants to agree with you. He's a bit of a Wookiee and he wants to join in. I am sorry.
Benson has clearly actually solved the internet limitations because he's not just a canine, he's an internet specialist as well, which is fantastic. Ian, back to technology and how we're actually using it and how it's become. Because, I mean, probably like myself, prior to March, April time, that Zoom was either a song by Fat Larry's Band or a 1960s ice lolly, you know? A way forward.
I think necessity is the mother of invention, isn't it? And I think I think what happened in March kind of forced lots of people onto a very kind of steep learning curve and using different technologies. And I think, yeah, exactly the same. One of the things in terms of the adaptations to teaching that are being made is around that kind of digital literacy part. And actually, it's highly likely that digital meetings, meeting on Zoom, meeting on Team, etc., is going to be a big part of people's working lives from here on. I don't think there's going to be a sort of a day where suddenly everything reverts back to as it was in 2019. I think the world has changed, and in some respects there will be some positives that actually emerge in terms of we've been talking about flexible working and different methods of working for quite a long time. And I actually think big organizations have actually found out that there are ways to do things more efficiently and sometimes better actually by using technology. And I think the education sector will have learned a lot, and there will be things that stay with us, not because they're compromises, because they're actually very effective and in some cases better.
Well, wonderfully, Ian, you've actually preempted one of our next telephonic Zoomers that will be featuring Andrea Thompson, the editor-in-chief of Marie Claire magazine, who, as we said, Marie Claire, kind of ahead of the game because they went online long before the pandemic and have actually benefited as a result of that. And we'll be talking about how journalists in the new world effectively are kind of coping with online stuff. But that's a tease ahead. Ellie, any final closing things you'd like to mention in terms of, apart from Wells Nelson today, if you're listening to this at any other time other than the 12th of August 2020, then you might be too late. Although, will people still be able to access a video recording of the event?
Oh gosh, yes. If you go onto our virtual classroom, you'll see all of our live lectures, not just Wes Nelson, but Chris Packham, Megan, Clara Amfo from Radio One, Lord Victor. A huge number of recordings are there. And also, coming up, we did mention them briefly, but Friday, Saturday and Sunday this week, the live lounge with myself and Emma Jubbs and some of the other staff to answer questions, 10 till 12. Just come to the University of Lincoln website and you can join us live and have a conversation and find out more, help you get ready for the adventure that's starting this autumn.
Exactly. And just to note that the Megan you mentioned there wasn't indeed the Duchess of Sussex that we actually had with the whole system. But, you know, it takes us full circle to various other things, etc.
No, Megan McCubbin, Chris Packham's stepdaughter. Really amazing zoologist, really amazing.
She basically has kind of hugely sort of added to the Chris Packham Nature Watchers and all the rest of the bits and pieces. All
she's
together.
Just lovely, isn't she? She's just such an amazing young woman and really does things incredibly well, and her knowledge is superb. But we're really lucky. Chris and her are such wonderful advocates of the University of Lincoln, and whether they're taking our students to Spring Watch or whether they're coming here and engaging and doing sort of examining biodiversity on campus, or whether we're going out and about, there's always something exciting going on. So we're really lucky.
Ellie Sample, Director of Communications, and much, much more at the University of Lincoln. And of course, your running mate, Deputy, of course, Ian Richards. Fantastic. Great touching base with your good selves as ever. We look forward to more Zoomers in the near future and probably, as I say, connecting finally with some of our other correspondents across the globe as well.
Prime ministers
and presidents
may come and go, but the certainty of exemplary entertainment on the Midweek Drive
and the Midweek Drive Morning Edition
remains.
Now, clearly, despite what the Chancellor of the Exchequer has been providing in terms of furlough and a variety of other factors to cope with the pandemic, it would still seem that there are an awful lot of stresses and strains out there. Indeed, a recent survey produced by Equifax has suggested that a quarter of furloughed workers are extremely worried about future finances, with one in 10 saying they'll never financially recover from furlough. Now, to talk through this, we're delighted to welcome two fabulous individuals. First of all, the head of customer experience at Equifax, it's the wonderful Lisa Hardstaff. How are you, Lisa?
I'm very well, Alex.
Excellent. And then a superhero from the Sun newspaper, of course, it's Mr. Money himself. It's the amazing Dan Jones. How are you, Dan?
Wow, what a welcome. Thank you, Alex.
And it's true. And I can say we've got a visual connection here. He has got the Clark Kent spectacles as well, which is genius. Lisa, let's turn to you first on a slightly more somber note. I mean, this survey has revealed an awful lot of challenges about the way in which people are really stressing out about how they're going to cope financially.
Yes, it's what's been happening, the whole sort of COVID-19 thing has had a huge impact on people. And obviously, as one would expect, we have seen that people who have been furloughed have the additional level of stress and concern. Of those that we interviewed that have been furloughed before the outbreak, 72% said that they felt fine about their finances. Now lockdown has finished and we've only got 45% of people feeling comfortable about their finances. That's a drop of 27%. Yet when you speak to the employed or the key workers, that's 8% and 7% drop in confidence. So there's obviously a high level of stress, and certainly within the East Midlands, you know, the financial strain is having a serious side effect on mental health, with 41% saying that they're feeling stressed and 49% saying they're feeling nervous and worried. Add into that that although 62% think they're going to go back to work, 20% think they're going to be made redundant, and a further 24% believe that they're going to be asked to take a salary cut. This is a very worrying time for some people.
Dan, we're very fortunate insofar as within the worlds of academia and indeed broadcasting, we can use things like Zoom technology, broadband can facilitate working from home and so on. But clearly there are many people who can't do that. I mean, Dan, from your own perspective, this statement, which I thought was just astonishing, that so many furloughed workers don't think they're ever going to financially recover, that's a really challenging state to be in, I would have thought.
Yeah, it's awfully worrying. And I think it speaks to the panic amongst those workers. Because, you know, first of all, if you're furloughed, you've probably taken a pay cut, which is bad enough. But also, as time has gone on, it looks increasingly unlikely that you'll go back to work. What I would say is that if your boss has decided to keep this furlough scheme running for now, and let's be honest, there have been plenty of redundancies already this summer, I would take that as a good sign. The fact they're trying to find a way to bring you back to work. So I'm trying to say to these people, look, it's tough, it's grim, but let's look at the positives. Your boss has decided to try and keep your job open. And I'd also say, don't panic. We've got to remember 10 years ago, we had the credit crunch, which was devastating for this country. And as a nation, economically, we more or less recovered. You know, most people came out of it okay. So I would say it's incredibly worrying, but don't panic. And you know, and we'll come to this in a bit, there are things you can do to try and get yourself financially ready for that. So hugely worrying, but I think it speaks to, you know, the fear in these people, but actually they need to have some hope.
And of course, you know, one's mindful of recent news, of course, that Arsenal footballers are thinking of going on strike because of obviously the problems that they've had with the club. But let's not go into football and furlough because that's a whole other issue. Yeah. Let's go back to Lisa. It's not just furloughed workers who are suffering financial hardship, though. I mean, this is something which, again, presumably the challenges of the pandemic does tend to ripple out across society, I would have thought.
Yes. We interviewed people who have been furloughed, key workers, and people that have been lucky enough to be employed throughout. And the stress levels are comparable across all of them. You know, even though you're employed, there is still a concern of what the future will hold. And to Dan's point, I think it's very key, irrespective of which group you are in, is everybody can make small steps that give them, firstly, a feeling of being in control. And I think that's very important at this time when we're on this roller coaster with no brakes. But it actually gives you a feeling in control. So if you go through your finances, and Dan has some great advice about what they can do, but you go through your finances and you make small improvements. That's one thing you can do. The other thing I'd advise any of your listeners to do in the East Midlands is go and have a look at your credit report, because it is likely at some point in the future we're all going to need credit of some form or another. So go in, make sure all the information is correct, and go and have a look at what things you can do. The Equifax one is traffic lighted. So if it's red, this is having an impact on your score. Amber is stuff that you need to look at. So have a look at that. And we've got a library of information called the Knowledge Centre. Go and have a look, read the articles about what proactive steps you can do. So when you need credit, you are in the best position possible. Because remember, even if it's really bad now and you've got a poor score, lenders are looking for a pattern of behaviour. So start making small improvements now. Make all your payments on time, make minimum payments. And when you need credit, you are in your credit ready, as we like to say.
So in many ways, it's taking baby steps to actually accommodate that line. From
and
that
each little step will help you feel a little bit more in control. And I think that's really important. We just feel at the moment, we don't know what the future's holding. So take a little bit of control on some things you can influence, because that will help you feel how you feel mentally as well.
Of course, there is the other stress of additional learning skills and actually coming to terms with this online environment, because I'm sure we will all have the experience with it. I press which button, what? Where do I do this? But that's another line. Dan, let's come to you now, because this is the moment where, in the classic words, the superhero saves the day, the cavalry come over the hill, etc. What are the kind of suggestions you can make in terms of coordinating and making some savings in the economy?
Well, the good thing about this cavalry, I come hopefully with very simple measures, really. A lot of it comes down to the basics. and the basics, of course, a lot of stuff we don't want to do because it's a little bit boring. But first of all, you just got to look at what's going in and out every month. So you need to have get yourself a budget planner. Great budget planner on the Equifax website. So look at this: energy bills. You know, what are you spending on that? Insurance, car insurance, house insurance, mobile phone, broadband, food. All obvious, but put them all down there. You'll probably as well during lockdown have signed up to one or two TV streaming services. Put those down. You know, are you at home or your pet as we have? Are you buying them more treats? Just put it all down there. But look, energy is one of the biggest expenses you'll have. You can't not pay for your energy. You know, at the moment, you're probably not spending much on your gas to heat your house. But you need your energy. But you are almost certainly, if you've not switched in the last year, you'll be overpaying for that. Energy companies are the worst at the loyalty tax, where if you stick with them for a while, they'll slowly edge your bill up because they'll offer a cheap deal to new people. I'm looking at that for a story for tomorrow as we speak now. It's the same with broadband, same car insurance, as we know, is a terrible one, house insurance as well. So write all those down, go through those, call up your current provider, see if they'll offer you a better deal. They often, in many cases, they will. If not, go on a price comparison website and switch. If you save, which you can easily do, £20-30 a month on your energy bill, come Christmas, you've got several hundred pounds plus car insurance. And if you've got a mortgage, not a lot you can do if you're renting, but if you've got a mortgage, just make sure you're on the cheapest rate. Just all these things. And like I said, you know, do you need Netflix, Amazon Prime, Disney Plus, BritBox, you know, all of those, which we've slowly accumulated. I'm going to be going through those after this. All those little measures, go through those. And that will trim your outgoings. And after a few months, of course, that money is going to still be in your bank account. So
come and November, mobile December, phones you look at as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look, mobile phones. If you took an iPhone out 2 years ago, you as part of your monthly fee, you're paying for that iPhone. You know, it's not really free. You're paying probably £20 or £30 of your £40 or £50 a month. Well, you've paid it off by now. Just ring them up and say, look, can I stop paying for that section or move me to a SIM-only plan, which Lisa was saying, you know, is a great way of reducing your mobile phone bill.
Absolutely amazing and straightforward advice, as we knew you would provide for us, Dan. Is there a website you'd point people to actually find out further information about what you've been talking about today, if they haven't had a chance to either note it down or they've gone and listened to the podcast again as well?
Sorry, yeah, go on. No, Lisa, after you. I insist.
We could do it as a choral speak if you wish, Lisa. But
we could.
Let's go with yourself, Lisa,
first. You
don't
want to hear my singing voice. Right, I think, you know, for anything you want to know about credit reports, the information that's held on it, and also budget planners, practical advice around sort of finance, go to equifax.co.uk. And look for the tab that says Knowledge Centre. And there's a whole wealth of articles, tools, etc. people can use there. Not just about finance, also about how you keep your identity safe online, because we're spending a lot of time online right now as well. So very good, useful information and available to anybody who visits the website, not just Equifax customers.
And anything to add, Dan, in terms of obviously get hold of a copy of the Sun newspaper, obviously.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Well, look, I mean, I do personal finance column Saturday and Sunday. It's always full of good stuff. I would say that, right, wouldn't I? But we've also got a brilliant money section online. You know, I contribute to that. We've got a great online team. There's tons of stuff on there. All the stuff I've spoken about will be on there. It's something that we preach and preach and preach. And, you know, we all don't do it brilliantly. Sometimes I tap my off the ball. But, you know, just always assume that most companies are trying to rip you off and you should renegotiate with them for a lower bill or swap to their rival if not.
Absolutely sensational. As we knew it would be, Dan Jones, consumer editor, and Mr. Money, of course, from the Sun newspaper. He is a superhero. And of course, Lisa Hardstaff, head of customer experience at Equifax. Huge thanks indeed. Keep on keeping on. It may well be that Dolly Parton's classic will need to be rewritten and 9 to 5 will cease to be the new norm, or indeed the old norm, shall we say, because in the post-COVID era in which we're working towards, a recent survey by LinkedIn suggests that actually more and more of us would actually prefer to work from home. Now, to talk about this, we're delighted to welcome a genuine dynamic duo of wonderment. First of all, the editor-in-chief of Marie Claire magazine, the wonderful Andrea Thompson. How are you, Andrea?
I'm very good. Thank you very much.
Very good indeed. And the head of UK news of that awesome company, LinkedIn, it's Emily Spavin. How are you, Emily?
I'm good, thank you. Thanks for having me.
That's good. Now, Andrea, I've spoken to a number of our colleagues who clearly have kept the magazines going by working from home. Is the magazine industry pretty much ahead of the game when it comes to working in a post-COVID environment and indeed arguably working solely from home?
I mean, I think what we're quite lucky in the sense that we, Maricare went digital first back in October.
Ahead of the game, Andrea. Ahead of the game,
yes, obviously. Absolutely. So we weren't actually producing a physical product. However, we were presenting daily news stories for the website and social channels. So what that allowed us to be is really, really adaptable to the ever-changing stories and atmosphere around COVID, because obviously things were unfolding on a daily basis, and the whole team working from home were able to pull together and be incredibly productive during that time in terms of covering, you know, just a huge breadth of stories as information was filtering through on an almost an hourly basis. And what we found during lockdown is obviously a lot of people are inside consuming content, so for us it was an extremely successful time. In fact, we had our highest audience figures that we've ever had during lockdown, and the team really rose to the challenge and pulled together to work from home, you know, excellently. So, you know, it really proved that it can be done, and we produced some brilliant work during that time.
This, of course, is really at the heart of this whole sequence. I mean, what we're doing this very day, i.e. using Zoom to effectively coordinate, communicate, get messages out there. It's if I was to actually sort of assess what I would have done, shall we say, 6 months ago, which would have been kind of a 126-mile drive down to Lincoln, into the studios there, adding on to the commute and various other factors. Emily, from your own point of view, clearly there are issues referring to the commuting lifestyle that actually could be really solved by this whole notion of, assuming you've got a decent broadband, of course, working from home.
Yeah, absolutely. So the research that LinkedIn and Marie Claire did, we surveyed professionals who are currently working from home and asked their feelings about returning to their workplaces. And we found that simply most people don't want to return 5 days a week to the office. And as you say, a big part of that is down to the commute. I've seen people posting on LinkedIn saying that they've been really enjoying what they've been able to do in that time instead of, you know, sitting in a traffic jam or sitting on the tube or a train. So instead, they're exercising, they're taking the dog for a walk, spending extra time with their children, or they're just getting a bit more sleep in the morning. But whatever it is, they're reluctant to give that up again now that lockdown is starting to ease. And we've actually found that 2/3 of those that we spoke to are willing to make significant career sacrifices in order to hang on to this improved work-life balance that they've experienced. So, you know, people have said that they'll take a pay cut, a more junior role, or perhaps even move industry or career entirely so that they can hang on to this flexibility that they've been experiencing recently.
Yes, nearly 1/3 would actually switch industries, and 19%, so just under 1/5, would actually take a 10% pay cut for a job that allows them to work flexibly. Andrea, we said that Marie Claire was very much ahead of the game from this point of view. Have there been any drawbacks or any challenges in terms of perhaps not necessarily being able to read the room? I mean, journalism for so many years was a very social media and a medium in which you would obviously relate to contacts and so on. We don't necessarily have that all the time with respect to the online material.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, at the start of lockdown, that people were anxious about the lack of face-to-face contact. And what we found was that, you know, that sort of brainstorming and creativity and, you know, when you get people around face-to-face and brilliant ideas come up, wasn't really possible at first using things like Zoom, because you just can't quite read people's expression, and you know, people left calls feeling perhaps that they hadn't expressed themselves very well or hadn't said the right thing, and you know, sometimes it lacked a bit of that sort of feeling that you can get when you're sparking ideas off each other in the office. However, as time went on, I think people adapted really, really well, and actually, you know, having those team meetings did begin to happen. Now, I wouldn't say that, you know, it's time to get rid of the office altogether, because I do know that, you know, A lot of people are looking forward to coming back, you know, maybe a couple of days a week. And, you know, in an ideal world, see themselves coming in on a Monday and Tuesday and having all those face-to-face meetings and then going away and actually just cracking on and getting their work done at home for the rest of the week. So I do think that there's a good blend of both to be had, and that there's a mixture of both will be the best solution. Also, obviously, everything social media plays such a huge part now. And that's all online. So all of the networking in terms of new stories and picking up new contacts and experts can all take place remotely. So, you know, journalism has changed and the way that we work has changed. And I think, you know, blending both is the way forward, really.
Emily, one of the issues that's often been raised about this new form of working that we could well be heading into is, well, what about all those office space areas in London and indeed other cities that effectively will lose their rent as a result of this? I mean, is that a case of, look, we are in the third decade of the 21st century, we're going to have to literally shift the savings we make through not having to pay out for heating, lighting, etc., by indeed the sort of loss that obviously rentals will entail?
Yeah, it's definitely something to think about. And then, you know, also companies like cafes that are around busy office block areas, they're going to suffer. So, you know, this isn't without its challenges for some businesses. But I think on the whole, office-based businesses are realising that companies at the moment, the coronavirus has impacted them so significantly, they need to make savings where they can. And if staff are happy working from home and it's saving businesses money by not having such a large you know, office space and large bills, then it's something that they really need to seriously consider.
Andrea, do you think there are any sectors that will actually be more likely to embrace this end of the 9-to-5 working week, obviously apart from Dolly Parton songwriters, as we said at the start, more than others?
I think that if you are kitted out with the right technology and you work in the digital sector, your career, your workplace probably lends itself a little more to working from home. Of course, you know, being connected to your colleagues and being able to work efficiently really does depend on the quality of your technology. So, you know, I think it's all about, you know, how well companies can adapt and how fast they can upskill their employees for this new climate of working. Obviously, there will be some people that will never be able to work from home, and a lot of people in gig economies will be impacted by that. But I see, you know, I mean, we have some big companies, Facebook, Twitter, Barclays, JP Morgan, all saying that their colleagues can be off until January working from home, and they're very happy for that to be the case. So I think it's something that many, many workplaces are really waking up to. In fact, it's the reality now.
And Emily, looking to another sector, the public sector, the area that I'm in, of course, which is higher education, the University of Lincoln and other universities who clearly are offering blended learning approaches and packages. That adaptability is something which, you know, clearly we've had to manifest. Do you think that for the public sector, there will be opportunities like the LinkedIn Learning obviously springs to mind, like all the other online materials that in essence students will feel happier with as well?
Yeah, well, this period has forced businesses across all industries to try new things to see what works. So I think, you know, we've seen some really interesting trials amongst people working in education and higher education, and they found that actually they can successfully deliver classes remotely. But an interesting thing that I thought might be worth mentioning now. So another survey that LinkedIn did around it's the Workforce Confidence Index, and we looked at the concerns that people have about going back to the workplace. And education, actually, their biggest concern, or they were most concerned about others not taking health and safety seriously in the workplace. So it's not just around people craving that flexibility or wanting to work from home. There's actually, you know, some real health and safety concerns now. So that's something else to be thinking about.
Absolutely. Andrea, obviously one can access Marie Claire online, as you mentioned. Where would you point people in the direction of finding out more information about for this LinkedIn survey?
Well, we have an in-depth article about the findings in this survey on the Marie Claire website, which is marieclaire.co.uk. And we'll be following it up with a lot of discussion around the future of work and agile working all week on our social channels, Instagram and Facebook and Twitter. So do keep an eye on those.
And Emily, presumably just locate LinkedIn and you'll find out details there, presumably.
Yeah, there's so much conversation going on every day around the topics of flexible working, what it's like to work from home during lockdown and everything else on LinkedIn. So if anyone's interested or wants to join the conversation, then yep, just head to LinkedIn and it's all there.
Well, it's been splendid sharing some thoughts with your good selves today. Are you using traditional radio? Because none of us have actually switched on our cameras, which is fine. That's okay. We can cope with that. It's a whole new world of netiquette and questions from that point of view. But for the moment, Emily Spavin and Andrea Thompson, huge thanks indeed. Stay safe and happy remote working, folks.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Now, we've spoken earlier about clearly the concerns and fears people have financially over the pandemic situation and indeed furlough and such like. But new research commissioned by Visa has also revealed a sharp increase in the number of people unable to access returns or refunds for items bought during lockdown, with one in 10 shoppers who requested a refund still waiting for or denied access to a refund or indeed voucher. To address this, we need to obviously bring in a superheroine of extraordinary skill and talent, a polymath of a presenter, a financial expert, journalist extraordinaire. It's the awesome Jasmine Birtles. How are you, Jasmine?
Hello, I'm feeling really good after that introduction. Thank you, Alex.
Now, you know, Jasmine, we always like to call it as it is with this programme. And Jasmine, you're way up there, you're a star amongst stars. But this whole sort of challenge that we've actually got, where clearly if goods haven't been received or they're faulty or they're basically not as advertised and so on, you know, the online marketplace can be wonderful, but it can also be really challenging as well.
Well, absolutely. But that is why you actually have more rights if you buy things online. If you buy something online and you, when you get it, you think, nah, actually, I don't like the colour. I just don't feel like having that. You are entirely within your rights to send it back and get a full refund, no questions asked. And you don't have that. And that's, by the way, within 14 days. You don't have that when you buy things on the high street. If you buy it on the high street, then you can take it back if there's something wrong with it and you are allowed a refund or a replacement. But if you just decide it doesn't really fit you so well, you know, don't like the colour, you are not legally entitled to a refund then. Many shops do give you one, or they might give you some vouchers or something, but they're not legally obliged to do so.
It's interesting. I mean, speaking from personal experience and that well-known Jeff Bezos company, which is based on a river, I believe, in South America, beginning with an A and ending with an N, I had a couple of situations where goods didn't arrive and it was effectively claimed that they had arrived. In the end, actually, they did actually sort out a refund and we managed to ensure that the correct address was sorted and so on. But it is sometimes a case of, yes, the delivery services that are often used by companies sometimes can either deliver in error or deliver to the wrong address, or sometimes perhaps not at all.
Yes, absolutely. And this has been an issue in recent past, because, as you say, more and more people have booked online. And of course, you know, you have a fault on both sides, because you do have buyers who then pretend that something hasn't arrived, ask for the money back, demand the money back, so they get whatever it was they had for free. So that's why quite a lot of delivery companies now will either photograph it, or they'll take a signature, or they'll scan a barcode or whatever to say this has actually been delivered. But if you I mean, somebody like you, Alex, I'm sure you would never do that. You know, if you have something that doesn't arrive, if it's a company that has a really handy returns policy like that particular company, you can go onto the website and sort it out. But it is actually the province of the sender, the seller. It's their responsibility to make sure that the parcel gets to you. And while it's in transit, it is still their responsibility. It's not your responsibility. And that's something that we've had to work out over the last couple of years as people have ordered more and more online. So you're on a firm ground. If it hasn't arrived, you can therefore say to the seller, it is your responsibility. You need to track it. You need to tell me where this parcel is. And if you don't know where it is, well, you're going to have to send me another one.
Yeah, absolutely. And it can be very frustrating. Thankfully, I think we managed to sort out the issues and all has been resolved, which is good. In terms of one of the other aspects of this research, I was astounded by the notion of fear to spend. I mean, I know we should all effectively sort of monitor our finance and so on. But it is interesting that given that we are migrating more and more to, as I say, an online working from home economy and so on, that when one talks about refunds on flights, hotel bookings and so on and so forth, there are an awful lot of stories that go out there, which I can imagine will certainly alarm people and perhaps get them to the stage where they say, "Oh, a plague on everybody's house! I'm just not going to spend anything."
Absolutely, absolutely. And the research by Visa has found that since the pandemic, it's been 215% rise in shoppers not getting refunds on things that they've bought. Now, this is still, you know, to put it into context, there are still, you know, 9 out of every 10 people who take things back do get their money back. So the vast majority of transactions do get the money back. It's all fine. It might be a bit of an effort, but you do get your money back. But there has been an increase in people not getting their money back from the sellers. And that is your first port of call, of course. So yeah, it is understandable that people have thought, golly, I mean, I've heard of people not getting money back here. It's a nuisance about that. Oh, I think I'll just not bother in the first place. Particularly with holidays. And of course, the holiday industry, the travel industry, is pretty much on its knees already now. So they are begging us to go and spend again. In fact, I've noticed on comparison sites that hotels, for example, have in red writing next to it, refunds available or partial refunds available, to really try and give people the confidence to go out and buy and to book their hotel. It's basically saying, please book the hotel, we'll give you the money back, honest engine, we will. But what Visa's also saying is that to cover yourself even more, if you use a card, and that's a debit card as well as a credit card, then if there is a problem, if the company won't give you your money back when you are entitled to it, then you can go to your bank, the bank that issued that card, and ask them for chargeback. And then the bank basically takes it over for you. The bank contacts the seller's bank and they get the money back, and you get the money back directly from your bank.
I was fascinated to find that it's mostly folk in the over 55 bracket who tend to experience the biggest wait for refunds. Now, I know patience is a virtue, but that seems a little bit a sort of little bit of an anomaly in the survey. That surely there should be, you know, a kind of standard one size fits all sort of amount of time that people are waiting for things. Or is it just because more chronologically gifted folk are more prone to actually order things online?
Well, it's a very good point. I mean, I don't think it's fair. I was wondering about that myself, because you would think perhaps that people who are retired, and not everybody's over 55 is retired, of course, but, you know, many are, that they would have more time to badger companies and ask for their money back. Maybe it's a different generation. They're not used to demanding. I mean, you know, one of the things that's thrown at millennials is that they're demanding and, you know, insist on their own way kind of thing. But it, you know, maybe it's that they don't feel, they don't realize just how many rights they have. And something I do say to people, and I have to say it to myself as well, is that persistence wins the prize. And certainly when it comes to getting your money back at the moment, I'm hearing of quite a few companies that are not even replying to people's requests for help and money back, etc. And this is, I'm finding this particularly with the comparison sites, holiday comparison sites, and some holiday companies, they're not even answering the phone. So in that instance, it is a question that I think badgering on a daily basis. And if you don't get, they just keep refusing to reply to emails and letters, etc. Find the contact details for the CEO. There's a very good website called ceoonline.com, which gives you the contact details for CEOs and managing directors of thousands of companies. Get in touch with them. That's most likely to get you a reply. And if you still don't, then yes, use chargeback. Go to your bank and say, you know, show them the evidence. Say, this is the contract. I absolutely should be getting money back. They're not replying to me. You take it over.
Indeed, and don't get me started on how bots can actually be taking over the world when you just want to speak to a human being and you just get bot answers.
Oh, yes, I had that at the weekend. Yes, it's a delight and a joy, isn't it?
Indeed. However, as long as the technology is there, it's proof that we can still connect together, Jasmine. And obviously, we mentioned moneymagpie.com as an excellent website to actually go to find a wonderful range of top tips, etc. Are there any other areas you would point people in the direction of as far as this particular topic is concerned with Visa, of course, as well?
Well, yes, of course. I mean, obviously, visa.co.uk has the results of this research and also information on how you can get money back through chargeback, which is very helpful, I think.
Jasmine, it's been fantastic sharing some thoughts with you, as always. So two final questions, a slight variation on the norm because of the technology that we use. Jasmine Birtles, have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us on the programme today?
Oh, I've had a more than reasonably interesting Zoomer with you. Thank you today. That's very kind of you to ask.
Splendid. So hopefully we can look forward to featuring you again in the not too distant future.
Absolutely. Call anytime.
There you are. You see Jasmine Birtles, the genuine wonderment of the financial world. Many thanks indeed. Take care and keep on keeping on.
Thank you.